charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Monday Happier Happy Hour, rolling through it, man. A little Peace Frog, one of my favorite Doors tunes. Got Evan in the world headquarters, lightly screening the calls at 844-967-2789. Tomorrow will be 1 week from primary day in the great state of Wisconsin, partisan primary day. Now, there are a lot of Trump supporter candidates on the ticket tomorrow. That'll be interesting. We'll talk about that later in the week. Don, we'll be partying tomorrow down at Hawks, doing our live broadcast, partying with the people. Little soiree. However you want to do it, man. I'm going to have a good time.
Man, that was a band in lacrosse, man. You remember that? Soiree.
I think I do. Vaguely, I do. I don't know if I ever saw him at the Popcorn Tavern, but I don't know if they ever made it to the bright lights, big stage of the Popcorn Tavern. Folks, you could be part of this big radio program if you call right now. I'll say the number for you slow in case you're new and you're listening on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, 1230 AM and 98.9 FM, or locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, WFHR, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM. I think I got them all straight. But anyways, here's the phone number. 844-967-2789. But Dom, I wanted to talk about the U.S. Senate race. Now, the big candidates, the big names, a lot of friends of ours. Tom Nelson, first, he got out. And Nelson seems like, hey, our guy did the right thing first. He started the momentum of clearing the field. Well, okay, Tom, you were the first guy out. I agree. You started that momentum. And then it was Alex Lazary's turn, the, you know, Bucks executive on leave. He was the next one to step out of the race and said he didn't see a path forward, didn't want to get all negative with Mandela. And then finally it was Sarah Godlewski who got out of the race. She said she was in, and then she was out. And so the field is greatly diminished, and there are still second-tier candidates like Olakara and our pal Peter Bukarski, but the common assumption is that Mandela is going to win the nomination handily, and he's your nominee. And how do we know people are assuming that? Because they're starting to mail him checks and send in their money. $1.1 million collected by Mandela Barnes this week.
Damn.
I mean, on that pace, that's like, what, $52 million a year in fundraising? Right. You know, now it was a good week, I suspect, for the Barnes campaign. But I don't know if you've seen the piece yet, Dom, over at the online daily Urban Milwaukee. Our pal Bruce Murphy, well, he speculates about why Lazary quitting the race raised questions. Like, why did he quit the race? Why would he need to quit the race? A few minutes just to put thought to this. Once again, Bruce Murphy, online daily, urbanmilwaukee.com. The decision by Alex Lazary last week to withdraw from the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate was, to say the least, quite a surprise. Here's a guy who spent some $15 million on his campaign, was in second place in the polls, and had the ability, through his own wealth and that of his billionaire father, to continue spending heavily. Why not keep going? Murphy asked in his column. Lazary explained that he would have had to run negative ads against Democratic frontrunner, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, and he didn't want to do that. It was the same explanation that Kevin Nicholson gave from withdrawing from the Republican primary for governor, but that was very difficult to believe, as I previously written. The more likely explanation is that his main financial backer, you know, the sugar daddy, Richard Uihlein, pulled the plug on Nicholson's funding. Similarly, there is much more to Lazary's withdrawal than simply being a good guy who didn't want to go negative. In theory, Lazary was the outsider candidate, the wealthy businessman who didn't need funding from the lobbyists looking for favors. In reality, he was greatly constrained by his tight connection to the Milwaukee Bucks, which likely figured in his decision to quit, or at least that's what Murphy speculates. Now, if you're unaware, Lazary's father is Mark Lazary, one of the three main owners of the Bucks. Alex Lazary is being paid $300,000 a year as an executive. He was also gifted a $50 million stake in the team by his father, a stake that grew significantly. It's like the old 96er now, Dom. in value thanks to the taxpayer subsidy of at least $700 million in a new arena that helped the franchise grow fourfold in value. So 50 is probably more like 200 now. But with that windfall comes some political complications. Democrats in the legislature wouldn't support the subsidy unless the Bucks management agreed to negotiate with the unions and support the idea of a $15 minimum wage for workers. More recently, the Bucks have asked the city to support a plan to build a new music venue on the land where the old Bradley Center stood. In partnership with FPC Live, and the team and the city jointly built a parking garage, which will be used for a new hotel the team is building. And some readers may recall when Bud Selig proposed, you know, a new stadium for the Brewers. Let's come back to that. Let's jump ahead. Alex Lazary's connection to the Bucks was dramatically repeated in his TV ads and mailers, which bragged about creating thousands of jobs to build a new arena and supporting union jobs and decent wages. He also went to some events carrying the Bucks championship trophy, or at least a replica of it, right? I've seen that trophy. Everyone in the state heard over and over about his connection to the team. So how would it look if he launched a scorched earth campaign against the state's current lieutenant governor? What would that do to the image of the Bucks? What would the Bucks management, including his father, a longtime Democratic insider and campaign donor, feel about such an attack? Moreover, Lazary's campaign was run by Mike Tate, a longtime Wisconsin Democratic Party insider, and Lazary's spokesperson was Nation Consulting. We've talked about them here before, Tom, which has handled the campaigns of many Democrats, including numerous Milwaukee Common Council members, Mayor Cavalier Johnson, County Executive David Crowley, Democratic candidate for Secretary of State Alexis Abor. And the idea of a divisive Democratic campaign may not have thrilled these folks either. And Lazary's decision resulted in the kind of coordination for Barnes, as if it followed the withdrawal, as it followed the withdrawal of Tom Nelson and preceded Sarah Godlewski's decision to quit the race. Now, Barnes raised $1.1 million from 21,000 donors this week. And Dom.
Yeah, I'll jump in here, Curdy. Bruce Murphy from UrbanMilwaukee.com. But the result has been a primary that did no vetting of the front runner. Back in December, Jessica Taylor, a Senate elections editor for the nonpartisan Cook Political Report, said this: Republicans are, I think, salivating to face Barnes. They argue that he's too progressive for the state. A GOP insider tells me the party is drooling at the prospect of running against Barnes. There is no doubt Barnes has some baggage, writes Murphy. He may face Republican ads claiming he favors defunding police, though his position hasn't been that sweeping. He has called for taking money from overbloated budgets in police departments and spending it on neighborhood services. And there is a tweet of Barnes holding up a t-shirt with the slogan "Abolish ICE" that may figure in an ad. Barnes said he does not favor this. And Barnes was quoted saying, quote, "The United States of America is the most wealthy, is the most powerful nation on earth because of forced labor on stolen land," unquote. Would it have helped if Barnes was vetted on these issues by a Democratic opponent like Lazary? Or
maybe
would it merely have reinforced likely ads to come from incumbent Republican Ron Johnson? Negative primaries have often come back to haunt both parties. To Dan Adams, a Democrat who oversees Milwaukee Works, a nonprofit that periodically polls on local policy issues and candidates, Lazary's decision to bow out of the campaign was a loss for the party. A quote from Dan: "Primaries that don't devolve into mud-throwing contests could actually help a political party, providing a dry run for ground game voter ID and turnout. Lazary's quitting robbed the party of this test." Murphy writes, "But it may be that Lazary's only chance to win was a mud-throwing contest, which would have also stuck to him and the Milwaukee Bucks, the team he represented." Beyond the big lift of Lazary's decision was for Barnes, it was good news for Republican gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clayfish, because a non-competitive Democratic primary means more voters will vote in the Republican primary. Given this unpopularity of Ron Johnson, 13% of Republicans, 12% of those who lean Republicans, and 43% of independents have an unfavorable view of him in the last Marquette poll, some voters may have been tempted to vote in the Democratic primary to pick a candidate they thought I had the best chance of beating Johnson. That might have been particularly true in the wow counties of Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee, where many Republican voters abandoned Trump in 2020. And Kate Clayfish can't beat her opponent Tim Michaels, some have predicted, without winning big in the wow counties. Right now, her campaign is very glad, perhaps more than Barnes, that Lazary has dropped out of the race.
I'm not clear that Becky Clayfish in some way, shape, or form benefits from, you know, the dropout of Lazary and the, you know, conclusion effectively of the Democratic primary, Dom. Am I wrong? How I don't see how Clayfish garners any true benefit as Murphy speculates.
I would, you know, I
crossover
guess,
Republican voters right. are going to bleed off Clayfish and vote for Mandela anyways.
Sounds
and
like then, something you might pull, try to pull off, Crudy.
And then they're going to spoil their ballots by crossing over and voting on both sides like Crudy did, right?
Right. I mean, I appreciate the perspective, but a couple of things, I guess, you know, and we've talked about this. You know, getting calloused, you know, getting hit a few times, getting punched in the nose. Everyone's got a plan till they're punched in the face, right? And so Mandela hasn't had to necessarily go through that specifically from his fellow Democrats. But I would say this as well, and we know how we've seen the GOP, the mega playbook on this. I mean, everybody's a communist. Everybody's a Marxist. No matter who runs against a Republican, if you're not mega, you're either a rhino or a Marxist. And that's the only peg they'll put you in. So it doesn't even matter. They're going to say these things, whether or not Lazary got into the mud or didn't, the Republicans are going to do that anyway. So I appreciate and think that maybe I guess I would push back on Dan Adams' thought here a little bit. Mandela just won a statewide campaign. People know Mandela Barnes. And the megas are going to do what the megas are going to do. So I don't know that if it's and I think Mandela can handle those things. If the worst thing you did was hold up a T-shirt that abolished ICE, well, you know, I think he'll be able to manage that.
And well, Ron Johnson
is not going to vote for him anyway.
Ron Johnson did try to hand off the fraudulent Trump ballots to the vice president on January 6th.
And I think once Godlewski got out, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but I think I did see some sort of tweet from Senator Johnson, you know, ripping on how out of touch and progressive and Marxist, you know, Mandela Barnes is. And Barnes' reply was essentially, I'm not going to listen to some insurrectionist bastard talking trash to me on Twitter. You know, so, I mean, if there's going to be, it's going to get muddy, it's going to get ugly, and as well it should. People should know what Ron Johnson's role was in this. Ron Johnson, you know, picked up a phone and lied to a reporter, said, I can't talk to you, I'm on the phone. And the reporter's like, no, dude, I could see you. And then he put the phone in his pocket and just kept walking. Oh, it was only a couple of minutes, nothing to see here. He's always nothing to see here. I mean, if you listen to Ron Johnson, believe what he tells you. There is nothing to see there. So I'm down, man. I think Mandela's he's got a strong case. You know, the megas are going to come out and say what they're going to say. Like, Joe Biden's a socialist and Bernie Sanders is a socialist. We said the same thing last time when that election came through. They're going to call you socialist anyway. What do? They call them socialist anyway. So that's not a plan. It's just a bunch of fifth graders talking trash on the playground.
Well, after Mandela wins the primary on August 9th, I suspect it'll be relatively early in the evening when we hear Mandela has been declared the winner, right?
Yeah.
There still should be some drama with the Republican gubernatorial race. I still intend here on the Civic Media Network to do some election night coverage beginning about 8 o'clock Central Time when the polls close. And, you know, I would guess by 10:30, 11 o'clock, we'll know who Tony Evers will have to face. But the blood in the street, oh, that's already starting. The Republicans are already honing their attacks on our buddy Mandela Barnes. He is effectively the nominee in waiting. He will be the Dems nominee. And Ron Johnson, oh, he's a hell of an incumbent. Some would say the most vulnerable incumbent senator in the entire U.S. Senate. It's our buddy Ron. I wonder if you'll join us up here, you know, now that we've got studios in Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids.
Well, he could join us if we invited him, but we're not doing that, right?
Well, you know what I'm thinking is I go around the state, Mandela goes around the state. Maybe he and I could work out a carpool. He could ride shotgun in the devil wagon. Have a good old time. Come back. Have a good time when you join us on the phones. Last chance today, 844-967-2789. More Devils. We'll be right back.
tweeted that Senator Johnson wished to hand deliver to the vice president the fake electors' votes from Michigan and Wisconsin.